WUSB 90.1 FM, Stony Brook. And welcome to this edition of the Healthy Planet radio program. My name is Bob DiBenedetto, your host for the best hour of your life. That's right, the one that's always in front of you right now. The Healthy Planet radio show focuses on topics that will help to educate you about the deep connection among all life on Earth and the powerful effects your everyday choices can have on creating a clean, healthy, and compassionate world. This evening's show is about a problem that we really can't entirely avoid contributing to in our modern world. Despite the fact that many of us are really deeply committed to cleaning up our planet and keeping ourselves and our families healthy and safe. On a typical day like this one, which is, by the way, a beautiful evening on Long Island, it's breezy and warm, end of August, I wake up in the morning and soon thereafter, I reach for my phone, which is made of plastic. And the charger and the case are also made of plastic. I pick up my electric toothbrush, which is also made of plastic, and I squeeze toothpaste from what may be a plastic tube. When I make my breakfast smoothie, I pull out my nuts, seeds, berries, produce, all the good stuff, some of which inevitably comes in plastic bags or containers. My protein powder comes in a plastic tub. I turn on my blender. That is plastic. And then I sit at my computer, which is plastic. I put my fingers on my plastic keyboard and grab my plastic mouse and do my work that is educating and inspiring people about how to live a more earth-friendly, healthy life. Since that's my work, I often read what are very disturbing stories about plastic pollution. I see the images of the sea turtles with plastic straws in their noses and whales with stomachs full of plastic bags. And while I have cut a lot of single-use plastic waste from my life, I know that I'm still part of the problem. But I also know that I want to do more to help. And this show that you're hearing right now is part of my effort to act on that desire to continue to make more of a difference than I've been making. So as you have already guessed, probably, our show this evening is about plastic pollution. It is by all measures a major growing problem, and a silent killer that's taking a toll on our planet, polluting our oceans and killing marine life. And like most damage that we do to our environment, it's also harming our bodies because it's finding its way into our food and polluting our air and water. We'll certainly be exploring these sad realities of plastic pollution, but please stay with us because we'll also talk about the hopeful side of this issue and what's being done to address the challenge, and a bit on what you can do to be part of the solutions that we really need. And I'm happy to say that this education and exploration is going to take place with the help of an expert who has spent many years learning, teaching, and advocating for the reduction of plastic pollution. Her name is Celeste Mayfrin Swango. She's the director of Environment Oregon and the Zero Waste Program Director with Environment America and PIRG, Public Interest Research Group. Celeste has worked on issues ranging from preventing plastic pollution, stopping global warming, defending clean water, and protecting our beautiful places. Her organizing has helped to reduce kids' exposure to lead in drinking water at child care facilities, encourage transportation electrification, ban single-use plastic grocery bags, defend bedrock environmental laws, and more. And she's also the author of the children's book, Myrtle, the Turtle, Empowering Kids to Prevent Plastic Pollution. Celeste, thank you so much for joining us on The Healthy Planet.
Thank you so much for inviting me.
All right. Well, before we dig too much into this very pressing issue, let's give our listeners a sense of who they're listening to, because who you are is part of the hopeful story that I'd like for them to hear. So tell us how you got started working on behalf of the environment and children, and what motivates you to continue this work, other than the obvious mega dollars and power that go along with environmental advocacy?
I live in Portland, Oregon, but I grew up in Arizona. I went to University of Arizona. I studied sociology there, and I came out of school really feeling like I had a pretty good handle on all of the problems of the world, but not as much of a handle on what we can actually do to solve those problems. So on a whim, I took a job working and building support for a campaign with Environment California in Los Angeles, working to build support for the nation's first bill addressing global warming back in 2006. And it was really exciting to give just regular folks an opportunity to make their voices heard. And over the course of a few months, we were able to build up so much public support, along with really strategic advocacy, that bill crossed the finish line. And I just became hooked on organizing. So I've run campaigns all over the country and ended up in Oregon because my parents decided they couldn't stand the desert heat anymore. So they moved to the coast of Oregon and I visited them and decided that I also wanted to live here. So I've been running Environment Oregon and getting to actually develop our campaigns here in the state, one of which is our Wildlife Over Waste campaign working to reduce single-use plastics. And I'll say, just as the mom of two little girls, I have a 4-year-old and an 8-year-old, you know, just ensuring that we're leaving a sustainable planet for future generations, I think is urgent and important. And I just feel very privileged to be able to do this work every day.
Isn't it nice that I know that the people I'm interviewing, even though I don't know about their backgrounds, I know they're in it because they felt a calling and they saw a need. And so thank you for that. Thank you for following that. Because there are a lot of different ways our lives can go, and we choose this.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, I do think it's a privilege to be able to do this work and have found a lot of fulfillment and meaning out of doing this work and helping people realize the power that they have as citizens and consumers and making sure that people have the opportunity to make their voice heard on these issues that really matter to us.
There's a quotation that goes something like, if you love the work you do, you'll never work a day in your life.
Exactly. That's exactly how I feel.
Great. So let's start our exploration of plastic pollution by identifying the scope of the problem and give our listeners a sense of just how much plastic we're creating.
Well, so in the U.S., we create more plastic waste than any country in the world, other country in the world. So we've calculated that the US alone, we produce enough plastic waste every 16 hours to fill Cowboys Stadium, which is the largest professional football stadium in the country, every 16 hours. And so that kind of leads to the question of just, okay, well, if we're producing so much plastic waste, where does it end up? And Bob, if you had to guess, how much of the plastic waste that we produce, how much of it gets recycled? What percentage? What would you say?
I would say 20%.
Unfortunately, it is less than 10%, so about 9%. And that's true of most recent years, but also just over the course of plastic as a material overall. So all plastic made in human history, only about 9% from what we can tell has been recycled. And by that, we mean, you know, turned into another consumer product. Right. About 12% of all this plastic waste has been incinerated, which is obviously creates a lot of air pollution, air quality issues, and contributes to climate change. And then the rest, which is about 79%, either ends up in landfills or in our natural environment. And that's a really big problem because plastic as a material, as you probably know, it does not break down easily in the environment. And so it can persist for centuries and maybe even longer. And it often breaks down into smaller and smaller pieces that can be really hard to clean up, called microplastics.
Yes, absolutely. So we're creating all these plastics, we're throwing a lot of them away. How does it make it from our waste stream into the oceans?
Well, so for a long time, the United States, you know, we were creating all of this plastic waste and we were actually shipping it to other countries that didn't necessarily have the infrastructure to manage all of the waste that we were sending them. And so a lot of that waste ended up in waterways and eventually made its way into the ocean. Back in 2018, China in particular passed a new policy that basically said, hey, we actually don't want to take your waste anymore, which has really forced a reckoning here in the United States for us to figure out how do we actually manage our own waste, which I think is part of the reason why this has become a more pressing environmental issue in recent years, both because of the proliferation of plastics, but also because we now have to manage our own waste.
That's a good thing.
Yeah, which is a good thing. Yeah. And I think is really forcing the conversation. It's forcing us to really think through do we want all of these consumer goods wrapped in plastic or made of plastic? And then how do we actually deal with all of this waste? So, you know, I think it's not to blame other countries for the ocean pollution problem. A lot of it is our waste. And I think that that plastic can get into the ocean also from the United States through our waterway system and litter and that kind of thing. But really, it's that there is so much plastic, there's really not no perfect place for it to go. And so a lot of it just ends up in our environment.
I had read from the UN Environmental Program that the equivalent of 2,000 garbage trucks full of plastic are dumped into our oceans, rivers, and lakes every day. Every day. So
it's shocking.
It's not just a little bit of plastic here and a little bit there. We're hitting the ocean rather hard with all of this plastic waste.
Exactly. And, you know, through that same report with the UN, they said at least, and that, you know, it doesn't just impact us. It actually, about 800 species worldwide are affected by marine debris. And as much as 80% of that marine debris is made of plastic. And that because of that, plastic fragments have been found in every single species of sea turtle that has been studied, almost half of all marine bird and mammal species. You know, so it's just having a pretty devastating impact on our world's oceans and the wildlife that call it home.
So the plastic pollution is causing air pollution. It's causing water pollution. It's damaging marine life. Anything else?
Well, I did want to share, you know, I think we're starting to learn more and more that there's the macroplastics, so the plastics that you can see.
Right.
But there are also increasingly more and more microplastics that are making their way into our waterways in particular. So here in Oregon in 2021, we did a research report where we took water samples from 30 waterways across the state. So we looked at urban waterways, we looked at wild and scenic rivers, and we looked at iconic lakes, of which we have many here in Oregon. And we found microplastics in every single place that we looked, including Crater Lake, which for those of you who have been to Oregon know that's kind of our crown jewel. It's our only national park, and it's a really amazing place that we're all very proud of. So it was pretty shocking to hear that there were microplastics in Crater Lake. And some of our other state affiliates across the country have done this research too and have gotten similar results. And so microplastics, I think, are just becoming an increasing concern. And scientists have found microplastics in the things that we eat and drink. So in addition to water, microplastics have been found in honey and beer and seafood. And the health impacts of both wildlife and humans ingesting plastic isn't fully known. A lot of that research is kind of happening now. But we know that plastics do contain harmful chemicals, carcinogens, and endocrine. So it certainly can't be good.
No, absolutely. And talk about what microplastics are versus macroplastics and where they come from.
Yeah. So microplastics are plastics that are less than 5 millimeters. So basically like smaller than a grain of rice.
That's like 3/8 of an inch to people in America who haven't learned the metric system.
Yeah, good point. So there's the microplastics come from a whole variety of sources. One of the primary sources is the just breaking down of macroplastics. So like I mentioned before, you know, plastics, they don't really fully degrade or take hundreds of years to do so, but they do kind of shed smaller pieces or break into smaller pieces that can then disperse pretty easily in the environment and are very difficult to clean up. Another really big source of microplastic pollution is our clothing. So much of our clothes now are made from synthetic fibers. A lot of folks don't know when you have clothes that are made of synthetic fibers and you wash them, it actually releases millions of microplastic fibers out through into the, you know, your water treatment system. A lot of water treatment systems across the country don't have the ability to kind of filter them out. And so they end up getting washed into our waterways. And there are efforts underway to install filters on washing machines that'll prevent that microfiber, microplastic pollution from getting out there. But you know, just when you think you've heard it all, there's just another source of this pollution that we need to deal with. So, and the research report that we did here in Oregon, most of the microplastics we found in those waterways was microfiber pollution.
So all of that microfiber that we're purchasing goes into the washing machine and that goes into the water. How about in the dryer? Does it send it out into the air as well?
Yeah, it can. But, you know, we didn't do our research for the air, but I know there has been research done that shows that there is microfibers and microplastics in our, in the air that we breathe. But the research that we did was specifically looking at water and the impact of waterways. So that's all a real bummer for our planet.
It is. And, and especially microplastics, it's so insidious. You don't see it. You don't know they're there. And yet these little particles can get into everything.
Right. So that's increasing concern for sure, is finding these microplastics. And I think it is, again, one of those things which the more we learn about it, it is sort of forcing us to have the conversation about what our priorities are. You know, are our priorities to manufacture a lot of cheap clothing, or is the priority to protect our waterways and trying to figure out ways that we can mitigate the problem best we can?
Right. Absolutely. And I will just mention there's a source of plastic pollution that many are really not familiar with, despite the fact that it's one of the biggest killers of marine life. And that's ghost fishing gear. And this is basically fishing gear that has been abandoned, damaged, and left in the ocean. Fishing is just a major, major enterprise. It's in addition to killing of the trillions of fish and about 40% of what's caught being bycatch, which means they just throw away 40% of the fish that's caught because it's not the kind of fish they went out to catch. We have these large fisheries going into the waters and leaving their equipment behind. And of course, we've seen probably footage of that, pictures, videos of turtles being caught in nets, and it could catch seabirds and everything else that lives in and around the ocean. Again, a major source of plastics pollution. It's just devastating.
Yeah, that is a huge issue for sure. And we definitely need to deal with that.
Yeah. And by the way, for those of you who don't know, as with most issues of consumption, the United States is one of the countries that's been identified as being the countries that contribute most to this ghost fishing gear. And that's including Japan, South Korea, China, and Taiwan.
So what we choose to eat does have an impact on this very large source of marine plastics pollution.
Yeah, it's just devastating.
This is Bob DiBenedetto on the Healthy Planet radio show on WUSB 90.1 FM Stony Brook. I'm talking with Celeste Mayfrin-Swango, the director of Environment Oregon and the Zero Waste Program Director with Environment America and PIRG, Public Interest Research Group. You can find out more about her work at www.environmentamerica.org. And we are talking about plastics pollution.
So let's move on to your work. As I mentioned in my intro, even with the best intentions, living in the world without encountering and using plastics and some single-use plastics too is really difficult. So while I and many others do our best to avoid them, we can't get all the way there just by doing that because it is really tough. We're still adding to the problem. So talk about your work on Beyond Plastic and what you've identified as the most efficacious tactics and goals.
Sure. Well, I'll say, you know, we just went through quite a lot in terms of the problem. And I think we have kind of looked at the problem overall and really kind of considered where are the places where we think we can have an impact on helping to shift the mindset and kind of shift the overall system away from plastics. And so we've kind of dialed in on single-use plastic in particular. And the reason that we focus on single-use plastic is it's the vast majority of what we find as pollution. And so we focus mostly on foodware and packaging. So it's the stuff that we use just for 5 minutes and, you know, we throw it away, which is just on its face, very absurd.
Yeah, it is. It is.
And so, you know, of the 300 million tons of plastic that's produced every year worldwide, half of that is for single use items. And then One other reason to really focus on that is that despite what the petrochemical industry would have you all believe, nearly all of our plastic stuff is not easily recyclable, not economically and not technically. Most plastics can't be recycled, and the plastics that can be recycled can really only be turned into kind of one other product two or three times. And then eventually they're turned into products that can't be recycled and end up going to the landfill. And so that has led us to a basic solution, which is reduction, right? So if your bathtub is overflowing, the first thing you would do is turn off the tap. And so ultimately, we need to turn off the plastic tap, or the problem is just going to get exponentially worse in the coming years. And so to reduce the amount of plastic waste that ends up in our environment, we have to dramatically reduce the amount of disposable plastic products that are handed to consumers every single day. Many of those items are unnecessary or easy to replace. And then for us, that means phasing out the most wasteful items. But then also transitioning away from single-use products to reusable and refillable alternatives wherever possible. So anyway, back in 2018, we launched our campaign focused on reducing some of the particularly problematic single-use plastics, like foam cups, polystyrene foam, also known as styrofoam, cups and containers, single-use plastic grocery bags, straws, utensils, and kind of figure out how we could phase those out. We had already helped pass a single-use ban on shopping bags in California. So we thought there would be the opportunity to do the same thing in other states. And so we've knocked on hundreds of thousands of doors on this campaign, educated the public through media events and webinars. We've generated hundreds of thousands of constituent emails and phone calls, worked with coalition partners to develop strong policies, held plastics lobby days and other events at state capitals, lobbied local elected officials, and have seen real progress. So in the past 5 years, 11 states, including Oregon just this year, shout out, we've passed bans on foam takeout containers and cups, and 10 states have passed bans on single-use plastic shopping bags. So now, one in three Americans now live in a state that has taken action to eliminate some of the most wasteful single-use plastics. So don't despair. We are on our way to doing what we can to address this problem. So,
all right, that's good. So the ball is rolling.
Yeah, the ball is rolling.
The awareness is increasing.
Exactly.
I'm glad to hear that. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I've seen stories here and there about new technologies for collecting and using waste in the oceans. And, you know, they have these boats that collect it and bale it, and they use solar energy. Are there any of those technologies proving to be really game changing, or are they all still kind of figuring it out?
From what I can tell, and I'm not intimately familiar with the folks that are doing those projects, they seem well-intentioned. And you know, I think everybody has an opportunity to address this issue in whatever way they can. And, you know, I think it's great that they're attempting to fix this problem in that way. For me and for us, going back to the analogy of if your bathtub is overflowing, right, the very first and most important thing that we need to do is stop the production of plastics. Not start bailing out the water. If we just focus on bailing out the water, but the tap is on full blast, it doesn't actually fix the problem. It does help to clean up the environment, which is important, but we're really focusing on those upstream solutions, making sure that we're stopping the proliferation and production of plastic in the first place.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Yeah. It's similar to primary prevention when you're talking about preventing disease. We can talk about screening, which is great, which is also preventive. But if you're approaching it from the perspective of primary prevention, looking at the air, looking at the water, looking at the food that we're eating, then these problems never arise in the first place. So that does make the most sense. If it's handled properly, it's the lowest hanging fruit and the easiest to address.
Yeah, exactly. There is another, in addition to kind of phasing out the most wasteful single-use plastics, there are states that are looking to kind of a more comprehensive approach called producer responsibility. Are you familiar with producer responsibility?
Only reading about it concept. Just now.
Okay, great. I'll give you just the very quick version.
Please.
So right now, as you were, and that your opening reminded me of the fact that a few years ago, my husband and I did a New Year's resolution where we were like, let's stop using single-use plastic.
Wow.
And then I woke up New Year's Day. And again, like you described, it's like, you're like, oh, everything is plastic. And I think part of that is because the system is set up right now so that the companies that are actually producing all of this plastic can just put whatever they want on the market, regardless of where it ends up after you or somebody else uses it, right? So they're mm-hmm. completely absolved of all responsibility,
right?
Which leaves you and me with limited choices when we're buying consumer goods. And then we have to foot the bill to manage the waste. And so, you know, we think that fundamentally has to change. And so by making producers responsible for waste, we believe is just a really important step to reducing waste and preventing litter. So we've been working in a set of states to pass bills that seek to incentivize producers to reduce their use of packaging and build products that are less hazardous, built to last, and are easy to recycle or reuse by requiring that the producers be responsible for all waste costs associated with their products.
Now that makes sense.
Including
yep.
waste collection, transportation and management, and paying to clean up litter. So we've helped to pass producer responsibility bills in four states, Maine, Oregon, Colorado, and California. And I know there are a handful of other states who are looking at producer responsibility programs for packaging. And so, you know, in the coming years, I think we'll really see that play out and hopefully have better options as consumers so that when we go to the grocery store, we can actually make a decision about how our products are packaged.
Right. Places like Amazon, Whole Foods, Costco, that produce yeah. an enormous amount of plastic. There has been some progress there, correct? In having discussions about this?
Yeah. So a lot of what we do is working to pass state level policies, but we do also know that if we're going to make meaningful progress to reduce plastics, we also need those big companies to do their part.
Yeah.
And so we are running corporate campaigns targeting Whole Foods and Costco and some other major grocery stores. And then we are also running a campaign targeting Amazon and other online retailers to reduce their use of plastic. And that's just another kind of bite at the apple because they have a lot of control over the products that are on their shelves and the products that are available to us as consumers. And so we think they have a really important role to play. Solve this problem.
Yeah. Some of the online retailers send a lot of plastic. You know, it can really vary. Sometimes, let's say you're receiving bottles of things. Those mm-hmm. bottles could either be wrapped in paper or they can be wrapped in bubble wrap. And when I see a company that sends me every glass item wrapped in bubble wrap, I am in touch with them to say, are you going to keep doing this or did you run out of the paper?
Yeah, exactly. Well, and that's so important as a consumer to let those companies know that you don't actually want all of this extra wasteful packaging. So definitely for those of you who have experienced this over-packaging, definitely encourage you to reach out to those companies. One really egregious example is that my daughter, who is now 8, wanted this particular stuffed animal for Christmas a couple of years ago, and I could not find it in any store. And so I will admit I bought it online and it came in a cardboard box, no bigger than 12 inches stuffed animal in a humongous cardboard box filled to the brim of those air pillows, air pillows to package a stuffed animal. It was like dozens of these air pillows. And it just really drove home for me just how unnecessary a lot of this packaging is. And this stuff just becomes trash the moment you open it. There's nowhere for it to go, really,
except for
the landfill. So we just have to find better ways to organize ourselves.
And that's an easy solution, because if that company had to pay the cost of dealing with the waste that they're putting out, Mm-hmm. And they would easily find another material that was more suitable and probably even cheaper, a smaller box, less shipping, et cetera.
Exactly. Yeah. So that's the vision, is really trying to drive both from the consumer end, but also getting states to pass bills requiring that producers pay a fee to sell into your state, to really create an incentive for them to use less or no packaging, or packaging that has better environmental outcomes.
And is there legislation in the works to address this, to make this happen, push this effort forward?
Yeah, so we've passed laws in those four states. So for producer responsibility for packaging, so that's Maine, Oregon, Colorado, and California. And then a handful of other states, including, I think, Maryland, Connecticut, Washington, and a few others are looking at passing similar bills. Oh, and New York, actually, are looking to pass similar bills, I think, in the next couple of years here. So this idea, I think, has really taken off. And I think we're going to be seeing a lot more progress in the years to come.
Great. I was happy to see in some of the literature, I think, that was associated with you, that you work across party lines to create legislative solutions. And you have to, because if you don't talk to everybody, then you only have half a solution. But it's no secret lately that the Republican Party has kind of fully embraced anti-environmentalism. And that ranges on topics from climate change to air pollution, water pollution, wild spaces, energy, and so much more. I saw Mike Pence's energy plan, and it was a great energy plan if we lived in the 1950s. But today, just looking at that plan, you wonder, how are they creating something like this, given what we're seeing around our globe with the wildfires and the droughts, the heat waves, and just endless storms and continuous onslaught of climate-related news? But there it is. So my question is the support that you're getting for the legislation in various states, does it tend to be bipartisan, fingers crossed?
You know, it does. I think you said it. You have to be able to work with both parties or all parties, depending on what state you work in. And what I like to really think through, though, is not just like, what are the elected officials thinking, but what are the actual folks that live in the state want?
Right.
Because we know that people, regardless of their political party, political affiliation, want clean water, want clean air, want a bright future for their kids, don't want to see pollution in their favorite beaches or their local parks, and I think are concerned about environmental issues. So I think it is kind of the onus is on the environmental movement to ensure that those people feel like they have a place in the movement and that we're actually talking to those folks too, not just to the people we know already agree with us.
Good.
And work to get those people to engage on our issues and have a voice in the process as well. And we know that when we do that, you know, the elected officials are more likely to actually support good environmental policy. So as I mentioned, in Oregon, this past year, in May of this year, we passed a ban on polystyrene foam foodware, packing peanuts and coolers.
Which is one of the worst forms of plastic pollution.
Yeah, just could not be more wasteful.
Yeah.
You know, the bill passed both chambers with bipartisan support. And we know that's because this is an issue that people, again, regardless of political affiliation in Oregon, really care about. And so, you know, it takes work to find that common ground, but it's there.
That's good to hear. I guess with something like this, where they understand plastics pollution, it's visible, they see how much they're getting and using and throwing away, versus something like climate change, where if they're watching sources of information that give them incorrect information, they won't understand the issue. I guess it's good. I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah, it has not gotten as politicized, I would say.
Exactly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Is there any way that people who are listening to this show can support legislation that's ongoing? Where would you send them?
Well, first of all, yes, of course, please do. Please make your voice heard if this is an issue that you care about. On PIRG's website, and maybe I can give the link to Bob to put on your website to share with your listeners, but there is a map that shows which states have passed bills to reduce plastic waste and which states haven't yet. And then we will also have a guide coming out soon that shows some bills that were introduced this year just to kind of show that there's a lot of momentum across the country. So you can get a sense of where your state's at. I think New York is among the leaders on this, but to kind of find those opportunities, let your elected officials know that this is something that you really care about. It's sometimes, especially if you live in a blue state or, you know, are represented by somebody who has a good environmental track record, you kind of feel like, I don't need to call that person. You know, they're going to be fine on this issue. I don't need to call them. But my experience working with legislators is that you do need to call them because they need to know that they're on the right track and that they're the folks in their district are paying attention to what they're doing. And we just need more legislators that are willing to go to bat for this issue. And so anything that you can do to kind of build them up as a champ or encourage them to support that, you know, getting rid of some of these really harmful single-use plastics, I think is really helpful. So that would be the first thing, is definitely reach out to your legislator, state legislator, and let them know that you support this. And then we have lots of opportunities on our website to make your voice heard as a consumer. So on our corporate campaigns, you know, we have lots of online petitions that you can sign that we deliver to those companies to let them know that, you know, we want them to shift away from single-use plastics. And then do what Bob did, where if there's a company that feels like they're unnecessarily wasteful, give them a call and let them know that you would prefer that they not, you know, be so wasteful and make better decisions about how they're packaging products. So I think we often underestimate the power of our voice or don't feel like our voice can really break through. But if you combine your voice with lots of other people who are making their voice heard, that's when things start to happen.
Absolutely. And what you mentioned before is so spot on. Earlier today, I was contacting legislators in terms of getting in touch with them about supporting plastics legislation. And I had a moment of hesitation there saying, oh, these people are already on board. Should I bother doing this? So that's a good prompt that even people in states where they have environmental advocates in office still make your voice heard. It's meaningful.
Definitely.
This is Bob DiBenedetto on the Healthy Planet radio show on WUSB 90.1 FM, Stony Brook. I'm talking with Celeste Mayfrin-Swango, the director of Environment Oregon and the Zero Waste Program Director with Environment America and PERG, which is Public Interest Research Group. You can find out more about her work at www.environmentamerica.org. So, having done this work for a while, what do you see as the biggest challenge to solutions? There are a lot of people looking to create solutions, and a lot of us know that solutions need to be made. So, what's the greatest obstacle for this moving forward?
Yeah, that's a really good question.
Or even logistical challenges that you're seeing in terms of how to replace these products?
Yeah, I would say one of the challenges when talking about reducing plastic waste, it feels like sometimes there is a lack of imagination in terms of the solutions. So at the end of the day, we just have to stop using so much single-use stuff. Plastics in particular, but we don't want to just replace all of these single-use plastics with single-use paper or other materials. You know, they all come with an environmental cost too.
Yeah.
And I think really what we need to be doing is shifting away from single-use to figuring out how do we use more reusable or refillable, or how do we actually just go without for a lot of these consumer items? And I think that is a challenge for people to wrap their mind around, even though that's kind of how Americans lived 40 years ago.
Yeah, you know? This is pretty recent what we're doing now, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But like the culture of convenience, this kind of disposable culture is relatively new. And so, you know, I think that there just needs to be a more open mind and more kind of imagination in terms of how we can be reorganizing ourselves, you know, to have the like creature comforts that we care about, but also not at the expense of destroying our natural world. And so it's a hard conversation to have, but it's one that we need to have. And you know, I think that there are a lot of opportunities for us to start kind of moving forward. So like, for example, in Oregon, not to just keep talking about my amazing home state, but Oregon this year, we supported a bill that passed that basically will have the Oregon Health Authority, which oversees our health code, update our health code over the next year to make it easier for Oregon restaurants to provide reusable containers. That doesn't require them to, but it just gives them the option of being able to deliver reusable containers in a sanitary way. And we're hoping that once we can remove some of those barriers, that, you know, the food trucks that Portland is known for will start delivering their delicious takeout food in containers that then the next time I go back to that food cart, I can return the container where then it can be sanitized and used again instead of just relying on these single-use containers. So I'll say I just think we have to be really creative and thoughtful about how we, you know, about our future moving forward and be open-minded to things changing in a way that, you know, may actually result in an increased quality of life, but will be different than the kind of culture of convenience that we have now.
Right, indeed. What you've said makes a lot of sense. The broad solution does require industry and government action, but there's always a role for individuals to play. For one thing, it's simply a matter of supply and demand. Having studied economics, if we demand more of a product, they're going to supply more of it. And if we're not demanding a certain product, they're not going to create as many of those products. Simple. And a great example of this for people who throw up their hands and say, there's no way for me to make a difference, is the organic food industry. Decades ago, it was only the very ecologically minded people who sought out co-ops or health food stores that sold organic foods. It was for ourselves, but also we knew we were creating a demand. And we persisted purchasing those things. And as we got to know more people and it made a lot more sense to other people that we knew, it started growing and growing and growing just from that grassroots demand, to the point where organics became one of the fastest growing segments in the food industry for years running. And now just about every major supermarket carries organic produce. Now, of course, plastics is a little bit more difficult because it spans all different products and every aspect of life, but it's the concept that's important. So understanding the power of enlightened consumers, let's talk about some of the ways that we can each reduce our plastic use, especially single plastics, including, since this is the end of August, back to school products, microplastics in fashion, as you were talking about, and whatever else you feel would make an impact.
Yeah, I think that, you know, we work for big systemic change, but it really only works if there are people who are the early adopters, I'll say, of the lifestyle that we're going for. So people who are opting out of using these convenient single-use plastics have a critical role to play. So I don't want to undersell the importance of individual action. So there's a lot that you can do as a consumer. The number one thing is to not consume, which, you know, I think not buy things that you don't need. Create a system for yourself where you are, you know, using less. So buying a reusable water bottle that you fill with tap water instead of buying single-use cups. Or if you go to Starbucks a lot or go to a coffee shop a lot, to take a reusable coffee mug. So just finding those places in your own life where you can live without those single-use conveniences and either go without completely or replace them with some kind of reusable that'll cut down on the waste that you're creating.
Starbucks will use your cup?
It depends on your state and what your health code rules are.
I would imagine it would, yes.
But I would hope that they would start to move in that direction.
Yeah.
And so, you know, there's just a lot that you can do as an individual. I mentioned that my husband and I did a New Year's resolution to cut down on single-use plastics. And while I was skeptical at first, we have just found that with time and practice and researching companies that will provide, you know, personal care products that aren't packaged in plastic or toilet paper not packaged in plastic, you really can get rid of a lot of the plastic in your life. Not all, certainly. And certainly as the mom of two kids, not all single-use plastics are possible to get rid of, but you can make a serious dent.
Yeah, I remember toilet paper used to be put in that paper that you just rip off. I've forgotten about that.
Yeah.
Now so there's everything's companies, plastic.
Yeah. Yeah. There are companies that you can order online that do package all of their toilet paper and paper. And it's all recycled and sustainable. So you just have to do a little bit of research oftentimes to find those. You know, we tried the like bar shampoo, which, you know, I would say not as good as the bottled shampoo, but it was a small sacrifice I had to make to not have that plastic shampoo bottle. So, you know, I think being an informed consumer is step number one.
Right, indeed. And some of the things are easy, like when you buy laundry detergents, you can get powdered detergent in a cardboard box, as opposed to this liquid, or especially like these little Tide Pods and those things, which are just crazy for various reasons. But you can get the powder, and it's just as easy to use. And it takes away the whole use of that big plastic jug every time you purchase detergents.
Exactly.
For people who drink carbonated water, don't keep buying carbonated water. Get yourself a soda stream. It does use a plastic bottle, but it's one plastic bottle. And you'll use that for, you know, tens of thousands of bottles of water. And so it'll cut back. I bring up a water bottle with me everywhere I go. So if you see me with a plastic bottle in my hand, it means A, I forgot something, because I never forget it. I forgot it. But B, I'm really thirsty and I need fluids. So I never buy bottled water. I ask restaurants not to give me plastic utensils when I'm going to the restaurants or getting takeout foods. Often they put it in there anyway. But every time I ask, I've done something that a lot of people wouldn't do, but a lot of people do. I don't eat fish. I don't add to the whole ghost fishing issue. I'm just entirely out of that whole horrible equation of what's going on in the oceans in terms of the gear. I order, as I mentioned, from companies that don't use as much plastic when I can. Sometimes when you're ordering things, you don't know what they're going to send you. And sometimes it varies. Sometimes they'll send you one thing and sometimes they'll send you another. But as long as you're focusing on doing the best you can and improving as you go along day by day. And also, I recycle everything. And I want to go into this now. That is hard plastics. And at our grocery store, they have recycling of soft plastics. Is that effective? How much of that we put into the recycling bin is actually recycled?
Yeah, it's a really good question. So plastic is a material. Just something to know right off the bat is that it is not a material that can be recycled again and again. So a lot of plastics cannot be recycled at all. There are other types of plastics that can be recycled 2 to 3 times because the quality degrades every time the material gets processed.
Right.
And so pre-used plastic is kind of more often downcycled, which means that it's turned into a product that is not recyclable or not as recyclable as the product from which it came. And that's obviously still better than, just going directly to a landfill or incinerator.
Yep.
But in the end, recycling plastic is not as sustainable or practical as recycling other types of material like glass or metal, which can be recycled an endless amount of times. And so it is confusing to know which plastics can be recycled and which can't, because they all have the chasing arrows label on them.
Exactly.
Which makes it seem like they can all be recycled, but very few of them can be recycled and then are recycled into a new product. So as I mentioned, 9% of plastics have been recycled, which, it is a failing grade by all measures. this is just not an issue that we're going to recycle our way out of the overproduction of plastic. There's no way recycling can keep up with the overproduction of plastic, especially given the fact that it's not turned into products again and again. It's not really meaningfully offsetting the use of virgin plastic, if that makes sense. So
it does make sense. Yeah. It's a stopgap measure because we have this waste to begin with and we have to do something with it, but it's not the answer.
Exactly.
And certain plastics, are there certain plastics that are more either environmentally friendly or recyclable? Like I've heard that black plastic is sometimes hard to recycle because they can't read the codes on them. Are there any things that are better, like if we have a choice between black and white or the cloudy plastic and the clear plastic? Is there a big difference in that in terms of the environmental impact or the recyclability of them?
Not necessarily in terms of the environmental impact, but if you're talking about recycling specifically, the type of plastic does matter a lot. So PET, which is the plastic that has resin code 1, which is, it's widely used for like beverage bottles and food containers and packaging. PET is one of the most commonly recycled plastics. They can be recycled into bottles again, but they typically get turned into like polyester fiber and clothing.
That then goes into our washing machines and polluting the water, right?
Exactly. I don't want to discourage people doing their best to recycle, but it is not an easy story to tell. I don't want to be the bearer of bad news here.
No, we want to do what we can. And at any point in time, you can only do what you can do. And you can't do what you can't do. So we always want to just be pushing that edge. And so what you're saying is valuable, despite the fact that it's not perfect.
That it's a bummer. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So, and then there's that high density polyethylene, which is the plastic with resin code 2.
Right.
HDPE, that's used in like milk jugs, detergent bottles, shampoo bottles, and those types of containers. Those typically, depending on where you live, of course, but typically will be accepted in curbside recycling. And then those often get turned into things like plastic lumber, pipes, that kind of thing. So those are the two that are the most widely recyclable and recycled. But a lot of the recycling market depends a lot on where you live and what the recycling infrastructure is like in the place that you live. And then you asked about colored plastic.
Yes.
Typically, like the colored plastic, the colored ones are more challenging to sort out from clear plastic. And it's a little bit harder. There's not as robust of an end market for colored plastics because it's not as versatile, which makes sense, right? Like if you wanted to make more plastic bottles, for example, if you had a bunch of clear plastic bottles, you can do whatever you want with it. But if you only had colored plastic, it kind of limits what you can do with that plastic material. So one of the benefits, not to go on a tangent, but one of the benefits of the producer responsibility laws that we've been working on is that the producers, because they're responsible for the kind of end market of their product, we think will make better choices about the plastics that they're putting on the market and put stuff that's actually better and easier to recycle on the market than how it is now, where it's just kind of like the Wild West. And it's up to you as the consumer to like figure out what to do with all this trash that you have in your house, right? It's crazy. And instead, it kind of forces the producers to make it easier because they're the ones that have to deal with it on the back end. So yeah,
makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, hopefully as those bills pass and laws get implemented, this will be a lot easier because right now it feels like you have to have a master's degree to know what to do with all of this trash.
It is. It is complicated. And even when you know a lot about it, it remains complicated.
Yeah, exactly.
Again, we can only do what we can do. Celeste, we're getting to the end of the show. Before we bring it to a close, do you have any closing thoughts on anything that you think would be a source of wisdom, encouragement, or anything for our listeners regarding this challenge of plastic pollution?
Well, I know that this problem feels really big, and that's because it is. You know, it's a global problem, kind of like climate change in a lot of ways. It's this big global problem that requires local solutions. And it can be really overwhelming to think about how on earth are we going to stop this trajectory. But I will just encourage you to not give up and not give in to despair. I think we are making progress. More and more people are concerned about this issue and want to do something about it. And I think that, you know, if we all kind of combine our voices, I know that we can see real progress, and we have so much power as individuals and so much power as consumers and so much power as citizens that, you know, don't forget that and don't lose sight of that. And that we, you know, we can solve these big global challenges.
And we have devoted, inspired people like you working on the issue. So thank you so much for joining us, Celeste. I appreciate your efforts. And on behalf of all of us, we're counting on you to keep up the great work.
Thank you so much. Thanks so much for having me.
My pleasure. This is Bob DiBenedetto on the Healthy Planet radio show on WUSP 90.1 FM, Stony Brook. I've been talking with Celeste Mayfrin-Swango, the Director of Environment Oregon, and the Zero Waste Program Director with Environment America and PERG. You can find out more about her work at www.environmentamerica.org. She's certainly provided us with a whole lot of information, ways to get involved, and yes, I'm happy to say, for me, even hope on this daunting issue of plastics pollution. And that'll do it for this evening's show. I'll be with you again at the same time on Friday, September 15th, and on the first and third Fridays of each month at 6 p.m. And when I'm not here, stay tuned to hear more excellent natural alternatives and healthy planet programs with cutting-edge health, environmental, social justice issues, and more every Friday at this time. For more info on Healthy Planet and to like our page on Facebook, you can find us on Healthy Planet USA. And you can go to our website at healthyplanetusa.org. And at the top of that page, you will find the archive to this show, as well as a bunch of links that will give you more information on how to take action and learn more about this issue. Until next time, stay strong, relax, make your voice heard in this world by continuing to speak up for what's right. Be kind to those around you, including our amazing four or multi-legged friends, and even those friends who swim. Consider cutting back on your use of single-use plastics. And finally, remember to enjoy every moment of existence on this beautiful planet that we all share. Good night.
Set out to do. Stand. There's a cross for you to bear. Things to go through if you're going anywhere. The things you want are real. You have you to complete, and there is no deal. Stand. Stand. Too long. There's a permanent crease in your right and wrong. Stand. All the things you want are real, and the giant beside him about to fall.
Our climate is changing. Making a few changes to your driving habits can cut tailpipe emissions and improve fuel efficiency. Drive smart. Go easy on the brakes and gas pedal. Get regular tune-ups by following your vehicle's maintenance schedule. Check your tire pressure. Combine as many activities and errands into one trip as possible. Reduce your carbon impact to the environment. Act now on climate change.
A stay in the hospital for people of all ages can be a stressful and challenging experience. But every day, teams of volunteers in UCLA's People Animal Connection, or PAC, make the lives of patients and their families better.
You see the patients get happier and more relaxed. They kind of forget that they're in a hospital bed.
The visits are provided to hospitalized patients without cost. Learn how you can get involved at uclahealth.org/PAC.